and the people who love them.
Hello, welcome back. This is The Thing About Cars. Thank you for joining us. Today around the table we've got
Ben,
Becca,
and I'm Mickey Desai. Thank you for joining us. I think I've said that already. I was going to kick off this episode with the discussion about tools, specifically Snap-on versus Matco versus Craftsman versus anything else. But we don't have Ronnie at the table, and I kind of wanted his input on this as a person who's worked in a professional setting using professional caliber tools.
And
so,
and people that work in shops have very strong opinions on which one they favor.
They
it's
do.
Not always the same one, but they are definitely passionate about the brand
yes.
that they feel is best.
So before we opine ourselves, let's ask our friends and followers to chime in on it themselves. Please, you know, find us on our website or find us on Facebook and tell us what you think about Snap-on versus Matco versus Craftsman versus anything else. And the next time we get Ronnie on the air, maybe we'll have a couple other mechanics slash technicians around the table, and we will get a variety of opinions and figure out, you know, is it really worth the, is the extra expense of a professional grade tool really worth it? Or maybe it's not. Who knows? So I'm going to officially start off this episode with our Jalopy Joust question, and we'll discuss the answer later on in the episode. The question is very simply, what was the What was Plymouth named after? Was it named after the English University? Was it named after a town in Michigan? Was it named after Plymouth Rock and a brand of twine? Or was it simply named after the road near the factory?
What was that about a ball of twine?
Was Plymouth named after an English university? An English university. My brain is just gone. An English university, a town in Michigan, Plymouth Rock and a brand of twine, not wine, twine. And or was it named for a road near the factory? That, so we'll come back to that later in the episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
You guys got anything on your minds that we should delve into before I jump into this next list?
Go for it.
Just go for it.
Sure.
Referring back to laws that Georgia drivers don't know, that may not know that these laws exist, this law is that people don't know that it's illegal to use the center lane to merge into traffic.
Oh, the chicken lane. Yeah, there goes my brain out.
The
chicken
lane.
We call it the chicken lane. When you want to make a left-hand turn across a busy road, people will turn into the
right.
center turn lane and then continue across.
Right.
People refer to it as the chicken lane because you're not going straight across.
I've never heard that before.
You haven't?
I haven't either.
So,
wow.
Yes, that's correct. The description here says the center lane cannot be legally used for any purposes besides making a left turn. Drivers should not enter the lane before they are 300 feet from the location where they will turn left, per Georgia law. And some guy here says that some drivers will often use the center lane to merge into traffic, or they'll enter it before they legally can. The law says it can only be used to make left turns, and you can't be in the center lane for more than 300 feet.
And so, that's been an issue. Yeah. I actually had a friend at one time involved in an accident because somebody was using
right.
the center lane to basically travel through. And
right.
their argument was, well, I was going to turn, but it was several
lot
openings
yep.
to turn left down.
Yep.
And yeah, but technically speaking, aren't you making a left-hand turn when you use it as a chicken lane?
But I think the 300-feet qualifier changes that, doesn't it?
No, you wouldn't be traveling in it. Well, not if you're doing it right. I mean, obviously
yeah.
there's somebody who's always going to try to travel down it. But no, you just turn into it and then you pause and then you wait. It's kind of like those center divided medians where you turn in there and then wait where the,
yeah.
the median is divided
I don't
to
know.
Continue.
I think the objective is to just get into and out of it as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, not to get on too much of a tangent, but the waiting in the break in the median is illegal in many states as well.
Oh.
I don't know about Georgia.
Yeah.
In New Jersey, that's where the cops like to hang out.
Right.
Okay. True or false? In Georgia, can you legally drive without wearing shoes?
Wait, I'm trying to think of how that's phrased.
Yeah,
you have to wear shoes in Georgia is where I'm trying to go.
Is that what you guys are saying? Is shoes are required?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is actually false.
Oh.
So
it used to be, didn't it?
According to this, you can legally drive in Georgia without wearing shoes, but you cannot wear headphones, which a lot of people are doing these days.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the new iPods or whatever Apple's calling
yeah.
them.
It's obstructing your hearing.
It's obstructing mm-hmm. your hearing. So so many Georgians believe the law forbids driving without shoes on. That is absolutely false. You can actually drive barefooted if you want to.
Good, because I've done that a few times.
Exactly.
So
same
have
here.
I.
Just don't wear earphones.
Well, how are they going to catch you?
Good
question. I mean, unless you're like my friend Ash hanging a foot out the window like an idiot. I mean, how are they going to know?
Or just, well, as an add-on charge if you've already been pulled over for something else.
Well, they don't look into the footwell to see if you're wearing shoes when you get pulled over. It's not like part of a mandatory inspection every time you get pulled over.
No.
But here's the thing about headphones. It's okay to drive with something in one ear, just not both.
Right.
Yeah.
So you can dangle one of them and...
Which I have done.
Yeah. So anyway, that's our law for the day. And that's our, we haven't actually discussed the trivia answer yet, have we?
No, but how soon do you want to do it? Didn't you just ask the question?
I did just ask the question.
I think the last episode, we pretty much answered it right on top of asking it, though.
We did. We did do that. So, you know, this may be a very short episode. So the Plymouth company, the Plymouth car company.
Well, wait, should we give our,
I think we should guess. Yeah.
What do you think, Ben?
Well, I don't know about the ball of twine, but I'm inclined to think Plymouth Rock had something to do with
it. That was my first thought, too.
Well, see, I'm inclined to go with a city, even though I've never heard of Plymouth. Have I heard of a Plymouth, Michigan? Well, the reason I'm going for that one is because Pontiac is named after a city, which is actually named after a Native American chief from what is now Michigan. So I'm inclined to go in the same direction, especially with how many Native American names there are up there, that Plymouth is from the state of Michigan.
Yep. So the answer is Plymouth, the company was named after Plymouth Rock and a brand of twine.
And there's a brand of twine called Plymouth.
So yeah, apparently it was a farm supply product. So
interesting.
Plymouth was named after the rock and the Pilgrim's Landing spot, the Plymouth and Plymouth Binder twine, a farm supply product.
Or as I call them, Plymouth.
Plymouth.
Yeah, well, if you look on some of their cars from the 1930s, you will see a sailing ship in the ornamentation. So that's what made me kind of think that, yeah.
I've never looked that close.
There's a 39 Plymouth that I saw on display last year, I believe. It was at the Elvis Birthplace and Museum in Tupelo, Mississippi. The Presley family moved to Memphis in a 39 Plymouth when Elvis was 11 or 12 years old or something. But if you look at it, the ornament right up there in the front of the car has a little sailing ship in the design of it.
Yeah, not surprised. Now, has Plymouth gone away?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, of course, a brand of Chrysler.
Yeah.
I can't remember when the last one was sold in the United States, but it's been a little while.
It's been, I remember when I worked for Chrysler, they were still selling Plymouths back then in the 80s.
My family had two of them. My dad had a 70 Belvedere, and then my mom had an 85 Reliant.
Wow. Yep. Good grief. I remember the fury we had to, back when I was doing this job in the late 80s, my dealership where I was working had to deliver like six or seven of these cars to a local car rental agency.
Yeah.
And first time in my life I'd ever driven a late model Plymouth Fury or whatever it was called.
Oh.
It was one of the worst driving experiences I've ever had. Just getting from the dealership to the car car rental agency place. I'm like, who in their right mind would ever choose this car?
And you know, I've never gotten to, you know, that I like the Plymouth Fury, but I've never had the honor to see how good or bad they drive. I've never gotten to sit behind the wheel.
My dad's Belvedere was a real experience, and this was a car that he inherited from his father. It was, now in the 50s, the Belvedere was the top of the line car, but by 70, when his was made, it was apparently the bottom of the line, and this one was as stripped as they came.
Yeah.
It had dog dish hubcaps and rubber floor covers, brown vinyl interior. I think it was an AM radio, and that was it was as unfancy as they came. It had little manual vent windows, if anybody remembers those.
Yes, I do.
It was a 318 V8 two barrel with a three on the tree manual. Power nothing, drum brakes all around. And I did some of my learning to drive with this thing. Not learning to keep it between the lines and go and stop, but when I was ready to start dealing with clutches, this was a car I did a little learning with. And of course, the second gear synchro was shot, and it was just a big beast of a car, just cantankerous as all get out. Because by then, this is the mid-80s by the time I'm learning with it, and it was really severely beat up and neglected by then. And, you know, foam was coming out of the back seat. It had bacterial splotching all over the paint, and it would really, really, you know, diesel when you shut it off.
Sure.
Because it had years and years of leaded fuel making deposits in the cylinders.
Right.
And so it would just sit there just going clung, 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 clung for about 3 minutes after shutdown. And my dad would actually sit there in the driver's seat and wait for it to stop. Me, I would just stick it in a gear and let the clutch out. And
half an hour later.
He would, yeah. But yeah, just a just a cantankerous beast of a car is the best I can say about it. But it has some notoriety too, because this was the first car that I ever drove 100 miles an hour. And it was on...
And
the statute of mackerel.
Yeah, the statute of limitations is thankfully long expired on this. This would be so self-incriminating. The tires were mostly bald, and it was a rainy day. And I did this out in, I think it's Baldwin County, Georgia, down by Milledgeville. Right. I was out by the lake, out by the power plant. And
oh,
just
good grief.
You know, it wasn't premeditated or anything. I just kind of did it one day. And
my dad had the car that I did most of my learning on was a Chevy Malibu Classic.
Oh, fun.
Which was kind of fun, and surprisingly enough. I mean, it was just a big old four-door family sedan.
Right.
You know, nothing really special about it. But yeah, it went a whole lot faster than any of us really anticipated.
Well, the clutch training I referred to, you know, the Plymouth wasn't the only oddball thing I, you know, experienced with that, because the rest of my clutch training was on a pair of Alfa Romeos that he had.
Fine way to learn.
Oh, yeah. They were great. I loved them.
All right. So I've got a couple of things written down here. I'm sorry, Becca.
Well, I was just going to say another good thing for trivia then would have to do with the Pontiac emblem. The amount of people that don't realize what the emblem is.
All right.
What is it?
Well, if we're not going to use it for trivia.
Well, let's use it for trivia then. Okay. Because I've seen a very old Pontiac emblem.
Right, so. But they had to modernize it. If we want to use it for trivia, I will tell you off-air the whole story behind it.
Yeah. No, I think that'd make a great little thing to discover. So a couple things that I have written down here is, one is a point of etiquette. And I wrote down, if you borrow someone's car, fill up the tank before you return it.
Mm-hmm. And don't return it with the check oil light on, like I had happened with an old car.
Nice.
I'm like, are you kidding me? Did you not just pull over check?
Good grief. Someone returned a car.
With the check oil light on. And the car had never done that before. It was how they were driving it.
So, I mean, first of all, I have borrowed vehicles from friends before, but I'm ashamed to say that I don't know that I've always returned them with the full tank of gas. Is that a thing? Is that like normal social?
I would. I mean, I don't do it often, but I borrowed a neighbor's Explorer a couple of years ago to pick up something before I had the Jeep. And yeah, on my way back, first thing I did, I stopped at a gas station.
Mm-hmm.
Now my travels back, you know, took it down, you know, insignificant little amount, but mm-hmm. I made sure the car had more gas when I dropped it off than when I borrowed it.
You know, now I'm thinking I've done that. I recently borrowed a truck from a friend and I returned it with a full tank of gas. So
yeah.
Or at the very minimum, the same amount you got it with.
Yeah. Well,
Right.
Well, I mean, you know, again, my friend Amanda let me borrow her truck, and memory serves that I actually filled it up literally two blocks away from her house.
Yeah.
So I did do that. But yeah, you know, I don't know. I guess... It's just, in my life, it's just one of those things that I just don't think about. Maybe I'm just doing it automatically, but...
Oh, even people that drive me somewhere, I will have them stop for gas.
Now, is that the only thing you'll do for someone when they let you borrow a vehicle?
What did you have in mind?
I'm like, you know, I lived this very sheltered lifestyle growing up anyway. I'm not sure if there are other socially acceptable things that you're supposed to do to say, hey, thank you, besides actually saying, hey, thank you.
Got all the Cheerios out of the back seat for you. I really don't.
I washed it. I've done that for somebody before. I washed their car before bringing it back.
Nice.
Well, see, I wouldn't want anybody to do that for me, just because I think most people would drive through an automatic car wash, and my cars do not go through those.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. No.
Right. Oh, okay. Well, apparently there must be people out there who don't obey the rule of etiquette and take advantage of the things that are lent to them.
I would definitely... make sure that the car had extra gas in it. If anybody does anything else, though, you know.
Right.
Maybe I'm falling short on etiquette, too. I don't know.
I have to pay more attention to what I'm doing, I guess. The next thing I wrote down was, when driving a car, don't be nice, be predictable. This person says that being nice leads to more accidents.
I think it depends on what they mean. I mean, don't go so far out of your way to be nice that like you're holding up traffic. But it's like, if I'm trying to let somebody out, if I'm already stopped, we were a line of cars and the car in front of me has blocked them, I'll stay there and motion them to come out. But they pretty much get to the count of three. And if I don't see that they're starting to move, sorry, you're going to have to wait, because after that, I'm holding people up.
Right.
And if you can't figure it out and pay attention. So I'll be nice to an extent.
See, I have trouble with the statement, too. It's like I think that one of the problems we have to these days is people have lost the fine art of courtesy.
Yes, an understatement. Yes.
So I would like it if people could actually just be nicer on the road.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah. People seem to be more going out of their way to piss people off, like making sure, oh, I see you want to come over. Yeah. I'm going to cram up so you can't do that. Or I see you want to come out of that driveway. I'm going to pull right in front of you.
Right.
It seems that people are actually aiming to be ruder and just a total a-hole on the roads nowadays. But common courtesy would relieve so much frustration. and you know, it's the ripple effect. You know, you've pissed them off. Now they're going to piss somebody else off. And now we've got all these angry people driving around. Just take 5 seconds.
Well, and that I'll have to remember where I read that line. But it makes me wonder if the driver must drive in a state where people are too polite. Like maybe they're from Canada or something.
Or Oregon.
Are they too polite in Oregon?
That's what I've heard. I've never driven there, but that's actually their own joke. I've heard a lot of Oregon people say, oh, we're not slow, we're polite.
Wait, what about Minnesota? I have an image of everybody being like Rose driving around from the Golden Girls.
I don't know. Maybe only during the snow days, but
good question.
I could not. And we have relatives. My fiance has a brother who lives up there with his family, and he says it's not so bad. You just kind of get used to it. And I'm thinking, no, I would probably never get used to it.
Mm.
You know, the kind of weather they have up there, and yet there's an entire city full of people who do it. So
yeah. I've got a lot of family up at Michigan, and you can have a 3-lane road and somehow have 5 cars cross. So.
Well, my only experience with Canada a couple of years ago, I was up there for a few days and I was on a motorcycle. So I was very, you know, conscious of what those around me were doing. Mm-hmm. And nobody was polite to the point where you could make jokes about it. They were very courteous. Everybody conducted themselves very well on the road, mm-hmm. but they also made sure they did what they needed to get done. Mm-hmm. It mm-hmm. worked. It was beautiful.
And that's how it should be. You don't have to be blowing rainbows out of your butt that you're so nice to everybody on the road.
Right.
But take a moment to be courteous, but do what you're supposed to do. I mean, that's exactly how it should be.
Exactly. Ben, you wrote something up on the board that I completely neglected until now.
What's that?
Toyota on the moon?
Oh, yes. Recent announcement that the, I don't remember what the letters stand for, JAXA, it's Japan's equivalent of NASA, mm-hmm. Japanese Space Agency. They have announced that apparently Toyota is going to be building a moon rover for them.
Huh.
I didn't even know the Japanese had a plan to go to the moon.
Yeah.
But apparently when they do, Toyota is going to be making the wheels. And it's really cool. You can go online and see this. There's a YouTube video of, you know, animation of what the whole thing's supposed to be like. The Toyota Moon Rover is supposed to have something like 13 meters of space inside, and it'll be totally pressurized. In other words, it'll be, you know, shirt sleeve environment inside.
Interesting.
I was about to say, how do you fit your space suit in there? There you go. You answered my question.
Yeah, well, I mean, you'll be suited up when you get in, but then once the doors close and it pressurizes, you can take the suit off, much like the one in The Martian, if anybody's seen that movie.
Or the shuttle, for that matter.
Right. And the Toyota one, I forget what the range on it is going to be, but it looks like a pretty phenomenal vehicle.
So just a big electric vehicle with...
six wheels.
One hell of a climate control system on it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, back when I was in high school, I used to fantasize about putting a 57 Chevy on the moon for, I don't know why, just pop culture, you know, BS reasons. But a Toyota is probably going to be the first car on the moon if this happens.
Wait. Is that before or after you watch the movie Heavy Metal and watch the Corvette fall out of space?
It was before. I had not seen the movie at that time.
That's hilarious. Man, I love that movie.
I believe that was a 58 Vet.
Was it?
Yeah. If I had to pick any year of old Corvette, that might be it.
It came up recently with you and I, Mickey, when we were visiting, my brain is falling apart now, the Atlanta Motor Cars.
Yes.
There was a Vet in there, and it came up because I was trying to remember which one it was, and you brought it up.
Yes. I was thinking about that movie the other day. We have to get some adult.
Of course, we've now also had, you know, that Tesla Roadster launched into space as well. Mm-hmm. So
we've had that car launched into space. So
right.
It's an actual car in space.
Yeah. Half a car.
Half a car.
The outside half, really. It didn't have any motoring guts in it.
Which is weird because you would at least think that if you're going to launch a car into space, you wouldn't think that if anybody finds it, they should be able to drive it.
Well, maybe.
Like if, you know, it leaves orbit when it left orbit. there might be some space explorer out there who finds a roadster that he would simply just need to charge up and go.
Well, I know Tesla's working on their charger network, but I don't believe they've put any in Alpha Centauri or Saturn or any place like that yet. So,
I mean,
we'll
see. I'd be thrilled if I were a space explorer and I found a car that I could just drive.
Wait, what was that one called? The diner at the edge of the solar system?
The restaurant at the end of the universe?
Is that it? Sorry, my brain,
Douglas
obviously.
Adams.
Yes, Douglas Adams. You know, it has the gas station next door.
What was the title you said, though? Diner?
The diner.
I like that. We should...
Well, you know...
The diner at the edge of the galaxy.
The main supporting character in the increasingly inappropriately named Hitchhiker's trilogy was named after a car.
Yes.
Ford Prefect?
Ford Prefect. Which is a kind of car, not a, yeah.
Because when he chose his Earth name, he mistook which species was the predominant one
exactly.
on the planet.
And it wasn't actually a species. He thought it was cars.
Right. And mm-hmm. at the time, they were right, because I remember hearing an interview with Douglas Adams about it. It's like, you know, he realized soon thereafter that the entire joke was lost on the American audience.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because we don't have Ford Prefects here.
No.
Right. So. No, and I misread it. I don't know how many times it's Ford Perfect, and it just...
You know, though, I worked with a guy a couple weeks ago, a customer I visited, and I won't fully identify him, but his first name was Maverick.
I love it.
I kid you not. And this was in Texas. And but my first thought was, you poor man, named after an old Ford from the 70s.
Exactly.
Oh, no, Mavericks are pretty. I like Mavericks.
Maverick in Texas, no less. Yeah. That's too funny.
Actually, I've heard people named Maverick, but... Mm.
Well, I have never met anybody named Maverick, except I thought it was like a Top Gun Hollywood name kind of thing.
I think he was probably already alive when Top Gun came out, so not Maverick, in his case.
But Maverick also being a word.
Yes.
You know.
It's a thing, right?
Yes.
We're sort of only barely talking about cars at this point. only kind of barely.
Okay, so something car related.
Well, we could just wrap it up and pick it up next time.
No, or I could sit here and vent about my adventures of trying to find somewhere to put the Pontiac at.
Now, why do you want to do this? I mean, it's forgive me for saying this in a very harsh way, but why do you care so much about this car?
Oh, that kid, I need a couch and somebody with a notepad and, you know, about an hour of somebody's time to really go through that. And it's
Is
more...
it a collectible?
Yes.
It is a collectible.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
However, I don't know. I am torn, but I have played with the notion of getting rid of the car.
Just for the record, let's tell the new listener which car this is.
Okay. This is my 2009 Pontiac G8 GT, mm-hmm. which is actually a Holden Commodore, and Holden isn't even around anymore. They are coming back at some point, produced out of Germany, but this was an Australian branch of GM that had been an acquisition way back when. Anyways, they were making this car, and all things aside, when the car functions, it is beautiful to look at. It has a very smooth but powerful engine. It's got the auto shift transmission. This is a car that I had purchased to help me out with my twins, and it gave me back a lot of what I had lost with the Mustang. Because where I got to keep my 97, originally I sold my 02 and went to a Ford Edge. So many reasons that car had to go. But then what else? And I had searched, not kidding you, for years, that something that would make me happy but accommodate the kids, and everything I came across. And the Dodge Chargers were still newish, and one of my friends who is a master mechanic said, don't. Mm. So I guess the earlier years of the Charger were plagued with some pretty significant issues. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's the whole Crown Vic Marauder, but, you know,
yeah.
And I was having issues. And I think I've told you guys, even just as a side note before, I was even looking at imports. So there's a V8 Audi four-door. But knowing that all of my family would have kicked my butt back all the way up to the north for doing something like that.
Surely they would get over it.
You need to meet my family.
I could think of other reasons why you should be glad you didn't get the Audi.
Well, yes. And it was an example. It was one of the ones that was crossing my mind. Yeah, I have heard a ton of good things about what I think they're the S series or something. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But also a pretty penny. And, you know, so anyways, all this back and forth.
Yeah.
And this car, I finally came across it in a very little known car and a very hard to get your hands on car. And it took me, even knowing people at dealerships, it took me months of clawing to get my hands on one of these. I had to have this one shipped in. And she was great. She was great. And the car itself has known issues, especially the GT model with the DOD system, the displacement on demand.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, 120 days after I'd bought her, though, Buckhead Barbie comes along and causes a pretty significant accident. And this could be a whole podcast in of itself. So since that day, she's had a lot of issues. And then you couple in the known issues. Yes, the DOD started to fail. And, you know, domino effect, my G8 has been what I call holding up the garage for the last year and a half, because it got to the point where she needed so much work. Nobody wants to work on her.
Yeah.
Actually, one of the places that was supposed to be a G8 friendly place had even given me some very bad advice and made some situations worse. And then it got to the point where the car could no longer get anywhere under its own power. And like I was saying, just domino effect. She's now sitting in the garage. She's been sitting there for a year and a half. So
you've got, I think, if I'm reading correctly here, you've got a couple of agenda items with the car, and one is get it out of the way.
Right. Well,
or two, fix it.
Right. And going back, I had kind of left out, I had approached my local G8 club a couple of times and said, hey, does anybody want a project? Because these guys, both on the national and the state clubs, claw trying to get their hands on these. But it seems like as soon as anybody hears the car still has the DOD in it, they all scatter.
Huh.
You know, they'll buy it for parts, but nobody wants to deal with that DOD. So I have tried just to find somebody who could give her what she needs. I can't right now. And my own personal ability to work on it, I don't have an engine hoist in my garage just to get to the oil pump in this car. It's 17 labor hours. Requires
Good
lifting
grief.
The engine. Yeah, it's utterly insane. And that was pretty much my big issue. But I have one, and I get picked on for this. Yes, I do refer to my garage areas as bay one and bay two. I have one bay where I am set up to work on my cars, and she is blocking it. And now the Mustang needs just her routine maintenance plus a couple of other things, because she has been a total trooper, pulling the heavy load through all the issues with the Pontiac. Now I've got the Jeep, but the Jeep also, you know, I got it for cheap, knowing that there are things that need to be repaired. Those need to be repaired. It needs its maintenance, all this, and there sits the Pontiac. And even my stray cat is now living in the Pontiac.
Oh, my.
It's almost funny. But, I mean, she's a great car, and I'm attached, but I still consider I need to sell her. And, you know, I could put that money into the other cars. However, nobody wants to buy her as a project car, even with how rare she is and how good she is when she's working.
Huh.
So that's my issue.
Very frustrating.
But yes, right now, my most urgent thing is I need to do the work on the other cars. They need their maintenance. They need to have this done. Plus, April's coming up, so the Mustang anniversary, National Mustang Day.
So how much does storage cost versus how much does a new engine cost?
That's my problem. That's what I'm running into. Yeah. A lot of these storage facilities, if you actually need something large enough to store a car, oh my God, the cost is unbelievable. Or you can park it outside. And I was complaining off mic about you can't do that because then you've got, in Georgia, two things to worry about, mold and critters.
Right.
And they'll get up in there.
Yep, it's true.
So, and then car capsules that used to be $200 and so,
yep.
I guess starting at, because the Pontiac would need a big Bertha car capsule.
We could make you one.
Thought about that.
We could go get a bunch of painter's cloth drop tarps and just glue them together.
I think it would need to be plastic because of the mold.
Well, that's what I mean. The ones that I have are plastic.
I've had something cross my mind. How can I seal these well? But then I have my HOA, and plus I can't just pull it out of the garage.
Right.
Because, you know, you would have to visualize my house is built into a hill.
Yeah.
So where our driveway has a plateau area for immediate parking and access to the garage.
As soon as you get out of the garage, it turns into a ski slope.
Right. Yeah. The driveway up to it, and then the backyard up, they're both going upwards. Yeah. It's not,
right.
You know, so I'm torn. What
about just putting a crate engine in the thing?
Because, again, time and money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, I've got two other working vehicles that, you know, if they're not going to take 17 hours and a lot of money, and it's just, well, you know, I just need to move her right now. Just get out of my way so I can do what's important, and then we'll deal with you later.
We'll have to check back in next month and see.
What have I done?
What have you done? Because we've run out of time. So thanks, as always. Is there anything else we need to touch on before we wrap?
I don't think so.
In that case, thanks again, as always.
Well, wait. Oh, wait, yeah, anybody want to buy a Pontiac G-H-E-T?
Does it have the DOD?
It has the DOD.
If you want to sell it, maybe. Are you going to put it on the market?
Well, I've talked to the group about it. I've seriously talked about it. I mean, obviously, I would not accept an offer if somebody goes, oh, $200. No.
What's that website? Bring a Trailer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is that?
Bringatrailer.com, I think is what it's called.
Is that potential project cars for sale or something?
Not always.
It can be. Yeah. It's really a bit of everything.
Yeah. It is a bit just of everything.
Cars that need work or something?
Well, it's just cars for sale that are not your average everyday Toyotas and things.
It's worth checking out.
I'm going to make a little note over here.
Yes. So while she's doing that, thanks to all our listeners for joining us. If you have any tips on what to do with this car just to get it out of the way, or if you've got, you know, an empty driveway bay or a garage bay or something.
Right. Let me borrow.
Reach us through our website, thethingaboutcars.com, or via our Facebook page. And The Thing About Cars, find us on Facebook. Thanks, as always, for being a part of our family and listening. We enjoy your comments and feedback. We are definitely listening to you. In the meantime, you guys be safe out there. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.